Hi folks, welcome to episode 48 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I am, of course, as usual, joined by Beau, and we are continuing on our Napoleon series. So last time, you may remember that Napoleon got crushed at Trafalgar, not Waterloo, but that was the end of Nelson, and so Napoleon's naval ambitions were, well, put to sunk, scuttled, I don't know. Yeah. It's got to be some naval analogy that I should have used there, I should have thought of. But so now we are going to be talking about the Peninsular War, because, of course, where else are you going to go other than, well, land?
Mm.
And I guess this was next.
Yeah, well, I thought there's all sorts of different ways you could tell the story of Napoleon's life, because it's so long, there's so many ups and downs in it.
And it's so well documented as well.
Yeah, yeah. And the Peninsular War, the war in Spain and Portugal, lasts for, well, 6 years, from about 1807, right until the end, till 1814. And so I thought we'd, because it's a big theatre, a big part of Napoleon's downfall, that we could just talk about that. Mm-hmm. Then in the next epochs, we'll talk about, because Napoleon didn't spend much time in Spain at all. It was all sort of, not entirely, but mostly farmed out to his marshals,
yeah,
whilst he fought bigger battles, much bigger battles, actually, in Europe.
Which we'll talk about later on.
Yeah. But because this is so important, especially to British people, it's a big story for Spanish, obviously, and Portuguese and British people. Mm. There's so much been written about it that I'd like to do a whole epoch, and even one whole epoch on it, we'll have to whip through it reasonably quickly because there's so much to be said.
May do something special talking about it in the future, who knows? Anyway, right, okay, so why did Napoleon invade?
Right, okay, so after his huge wins in 05 at Austerlitz and stuff, he had a tiny bit of breathing room. And his grand design was to conquer all of Europe. There's no real question about that. He was quite explicit about it. And especially the continental system, where he'd be preventing anyone in Europe trading with us. So part of that, he needed to control Spain and Portugal. So it's part of it. And in fact, by like 1807, the only countries that were really not playing ball was Turkey, the Ottomans, and Portugal.
Right.
For very different reasons, like the Turks sort of got their own pride, and they don't have to do what Napoleon says necessarily.
Well, they were a great empire of their own at the time.
Yeah, so, no, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So Napoleon never brought the Ottoman to kneel, to heel rather. And the Portuguese have just always had a really close relationship with Britain,
oldest alliance in the world since like 1340 or something.
Yeah.
Around there.
Yeah. So, like half a millennia before this, we were sort of very
England
close
and
allies.
Portugal were allied. Yeah.
So, where the Portuguese just weren't doing what Napoleon wanted, he resolved that he was going to invade them.
Right. Okay.
And so.
The Spanish were playing ball then?
Well, mostly. So, yeah, let's start there. So, the King of Spain is Charles IV. And he, as I mentioned in the last one, he was an imbecile. Mm-hmm. I mean, clinically.
Yes. Not just someone who makes errors, just literally medically an imbecile.
Yeah.
Which is where the term originated, isn't it?
I think so.
From medical practice.
Yeah, I believe so, yeah. And he was, he's not as badly inbred as some of the Habsburgs before him, but nevertheless,
Google the Habsburg chin.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like,
if you want to know.
Pretty bad deformities.
It's quite hideous.
So he wasn't like actually a dribbling, like half vegetable or anything. He could deliver speeches and he knew what was going on, but he was fairly simple of mind and didn't care at all about being a king. Well, I mean, he did, but he didn't want to do the business of government.
Yeah.
He farmed it all out. All he wanted to do was hunt. That's all he cared about was hunting.
Very much a sort of Merovingian mayor of the palace, sort of.
Yeah, that's what you mean by that. Yeah, yeah. For sure. But his wife, who wasn't silly, she basically did nearly all the business of government, and at least to begin with. And this Charles IV was happy to let that happen. But she had a lover, Manuel Godoy, who was of no real station or birth, but she raised him up to be the first man of the state, basically.
Right.
Created him, in the end, she created him a duke, which was just unheard of. And eventually she made him a prince, called him the Prince of Peace. Really nonsense. But anyway, this Godoy character was just venal and corrupt and inept. He wasn't good.
What a surprise.
Yeah.
But then neither was the king, so, you know.
And but the, he had this, the king had an heir, Ferdinand, this boy Ferdinand, or young man by the end, by the time Napoleon gets involved, Ferdinand. And you can imagine that this Godoy figure and Ferdinand were completely odds with each other.
Yeah, I can't imagine Ferdinand was a big fan.
Yeah, and Godoy was actively preventing him from sort of getting on in life. And but also this Ferdinand was really weak. In fact, Sir Charles Oman says about the king, Charles IV, and his son Ferdinand, there was nothing to choose between them in the way of incompetence and effeteness. Which is quite rude, isn't it?
what an international embarrassment, though. The great kingdom of Spain is being ruled by an idiot cuckold and an illegitimate prince of peace, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Like, there's a public embarrassment.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, lots and lots of Spanish people at the time wanted really to get rid of Godoy. They despised him. And we'll like dethrone the old useless king, and we'll have the young Ferdinand. He's still not brilliant. Like I say, he's still sort of weak and effete.
But he's still not better. This bad, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so,
he's not Will Smith.
There are parallels there, aren't there?
feel bad for him. He's probably a lovely, lovely guy, the kid, Charles. Anyway.
So, I mean, just this period, you could talk about it in so much detail, but this Godoy ultimately had designs on being a sovereign in his own right.
Oh, well, no, why not?
He wanted to be sort of an actual, not a prince in, not a sort of an honorary prince, but an actual sovereign. And so anyway, where Napoleon's regime and the Spanish wanted to sort of, well, the Spanish didn't want to have a war with the French. They knew they would lose.
Yeah.
They've not really got a great army.
I mean, everyone's going to lose.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone's, okay, come on. Obviously, you're going to lose.
So they, at least on paper, did more or less everything Napoleon asked of them. Hmm. And this Ferdinand was in sort of a secret correspondence with Napoleon's government saying, you know, if you want to sweep away my father and Godoy, you can put me on the throne and I'll be your loyal subject.
Yes.
And so anyway, when it came to, I have to skip out so much of this detail, but when Napoleon decided in 1807 that he really needed to invade Portugal, he said to Godoy, who's really the head of government, he pulls all the strings, said to him, look, let us march divisions, a whole army is really, through northern Spain, so we can go to Portugal and we'll get rid of the Portuguese monarchy. And we'll help you out in all sorts of different ways. And, of course, we won't attack you.
Yeah.
But that was all just...
I mean, you'll take his word for it, I suppose. What choice have you got?
Well, yeah, if they just said no, then he would have been...
Wouldn't you fight him for it?
He would have been revealed as just a conqueror right there and then.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. It was all just a ploy to... and it works so perfectly, like, because they say to this... Napoleon says to this Godoy figure, he says... If your reward for this will be an actual principality, completely in your own right, and he's blinded by that offer, it's what he's always wanted.
Yeah,
and so he okays it, and the French divisions just pour across the Pyrenees,
which is just the last thing you want, as Machiavelli would point out, is hundreds of thousands of auxiliaries from another country occupying your country. Because that's just going to turn you into the slave of whoever it is, whichever sovereign controls them and to whom they owe loyalty. Like, this is the monarchy of Spain essentially abdicating its own sovereignty at this point.
Yeah, yeah. It's Machiavelli 101. He explicitly says exactly this.
Do not do this.
Yeah, yeah. Don't ever fall for that.
Yeah, don't rely on auxiliaries or mercenaries. End of conversation. But anyway, yeah.
Well, Napoleon's just sort of, he's so... ruthless in a great way from his point of view. So, for example, he says, so we're allies now.
Yeah.
So you put most of your army under my control or the control of my marshals, and we'll do this together. And as it started, he sort of ordered most of the Spanish best divisions that had been put under his control. He orders them entirely out of Spain.
To where?
Just other places in Europe. Because also
right, we've merged armies basically now. So your guys are going to the front in Poland or wherever.
Yeah, right.
And yeah.
A long way from defending Madrid.
And hundreds of thousands of my French soldiers are going to be just occupying your country and doing the work here. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, Yeah, no, that's absolutely it.
You are in for a pound there. You're not kidding. That's it. That's the end of your country, basically.
Yeah, yeah. But this Godoy absolutely fell for it.
Well, there
And it wasn't until at some point he'd asked the French army to do something or other, and they were like, no. And he's like, oh, right, I understand what's going on here now. Well, to cut all sorts of different things short, there was...
Leave a comment on this if you want Bo to do a separate thing on his own, explaining the Peninsular War in probably unnecessary detail.
in the end, I'm jumping ahead slightly, but in the end, he forces them to the Spanish monarchy to abdicate. And Godoy is also taken away at the same time.
Right.
And Ferdinand is disinherited, and they're all taken into France and kept under house arrest, essentially. Quite a pleasant house arrest. They're not thrown into cells. That's
better than what happened to Louis XVI.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. It could have been a lot worse for them.
Well, I've been captured by who? The French. What, the people who chop off the heads of kings? Not ideal, you know.
Yeah, although if you were a foreign head of state or a foreign king, you wouldn't do too badly under Napoleon. You know, he'd keep you... He had respect for...
Yeah.
Well, I say... Yeah, he wasn't just murder them straight away.
No, but you don't know that tomorrow Napoleon won't be overthrown and the revolutionaries will be back and be like, oh, we've got a king here. What do we do to kings, chaps, you know? It's not like the revolutionary fervour wasn't still present in France. So anyway, sorry.
Yeah. So just to tell you that what happens in the end, Godoy lives for years and years more. He doesn't die until, I think, the 1850s or something, essentially, really? Of old age, and in quite nice surroundings. After the Napoleonic era is entirely over with, Ferdinand comes back and is King of Spain, is restored.
And he doesn't kill Godoy?
No, he doesn't let Godoy return. Right. And Godoy spends a lot of his later life in Italy, actually. But then right at the end of his life, he does let him come back. Because this Ferdinand, like I say, he's quite weak. He's quite a nice person. He's just a normal person to you or I. He's not murderous or anything.
And if there's one thing you can't afford to be if you're a king, it's a nice person.
Not really. But these are like sort of titular heads of state. They're not really like a medieval Henry V type king or anything. Mm. But so I've jumped ahead a little bit there in terms of what happened to Spain. So let's rewind just a touch to where the French armies, it was genuine, they want to invade Portugal.
I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of men as well.
Yeah, at first it's 80 or 100,000 guys to begin with at the very first French. Well, that's the thing. They first send in, I think, 40,000 or 80,000. They keep sending more and more. And the Godoy and the Spanish authorities like, why? There's more and more divisions pouring across the Pyrenees. Well, they start getting suspicious quite quickly, but what can you do? I mean...
Your armies are on the other side of Europe.
Yeah. And for a long time, it's been known that the Spanish armies are second rate, really. Yeah. I mean, Napoleon considers all Spaniards to be sort of second rate men.
It's not very nice.
He considers Spain to be sort of just a backwater.
Big talk coming from a Frenchman.
Right, yeah. Yeah. So anyway... The French invasion of Portugal in the first instance in 1807 is relatively easy. The Portuguese don't put up a massive amount of resistance because at this point, Napoleon's armies and Napoleon's marshals have got this aura of invincibility about them. Of course, they've lost here and there little things. It didn't go brilliant in Egypt, did it, for example?
No.
And there are small battles, but they've still got this... Yeah, this veneer of invincibility.
Yeah, because it's not a sort of stand-up crushing defeat. You know, a straight-up, you know, two big armies came to battle and the French lost. You know, there's nothing you can pin that on.
Right.
Know, that's where it gets burst.
And that first happens in the Peninsular War.
Right.
A bit later. In fact, I've got a great quote here from Napoleon. It's about the abdications of Bayonne, which is that when they forced the Spanish and Portuguese monarchies to abdicate. Napoleon is supposed to have said, quote, "The House of Braganza has ceased to reign." Just that. Full stop.
Okay.
Just like, okay.
Oh, underline that, you know.
He put his older brother Joseph on the throne.
Yeah.
So for all throughout this, it's King Joseph Bonaparte of Spain.
Nice work if you can get it.
He sort of sits in Madrid most of the time. And so something to mention, I was just about to mention the geography of Spain, because it is important. But just before I say that, the invasion of Portugal is relatively bloodless, because the Portuguese kind of don't put up a fight, really. Even when the French armies get all the way to Lisbon, which is right at the southern extremity of Portugal, even though they're completely exhausted, and there's not that many of them, and historians have said that if even a sort of a Portuguese, a Lisbon, the militia of Lisbon could have stopped them from entering the city, but they just think they're beaten. So it's sort of without a shot fired almost.
See, there's a kind of materialist writing of history that I despise in almost every sense, where it's like, well, look at the resources that this country had available. Therefore, it was inevitable that they were going to win this war, or that this country was going to lose that war because of material differences. And it's just like, well, that's just not how these things work when you're actually on the ground. Almost all of it is based on will to fight.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.